Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
Hi, Stephen. How are you doing? Good to be with you guys again.
Doing great. And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
Okay, before we jump in, I just want to mention to you guys that I kind of got threatened after the game last week. it was Caroline. I think her name was Kendra. It was pretty scary.
Thanks.
Well, hopefully there's video of it, so we can verify that claim. But I'm kind of guessing that you're exaggerating this threat.
It's possible.
You think she kind of said like, "Excuse me, I'm trying to get by" or something like that?
It was more like, "Get out of my way." But
okay.
I think she was saying you talked smack about this member of the Baylor line last year. And I don't really appreciate that. You know, I think she was sticking up for her fellow Baylor line member. But anyway, I'm glad you survived, Stephen. That could have been pretty bad.
Okay. Well, let's go back and rehash what was, I think, pretty much the most exciting game that Baylor's played since maybe the Oklahoma game a couple of years ago when Griffin threw the touchdown pass. That's about as close as I can think of. Kevin, what are your basic thoughts on the game?
Well, I think at 58-37, I'm sure each one of us is thinking, and probably the Baylor contingent that was in McLean Stadium and those watching pretty much felt like this thing was over, because it's really hard to come back down three touchdowns. But funny thing is about that is that when your opposition decides to commit two ridiculous unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, has to kick from its 10, then decides to squib kick it, which I didn't understand that, and then Baylor scores three plays later to bring it to within two touchdowns. That's when I thought they might even come back and get this thing tied and go to overtime. Heck, we didn't even need that. It's a great testament to Baylor's courage and their will to try and find a way to get back in and get a W out of this thing. I also think, too, we learned a little bit more about Bryce Petty because, guys, as we've talked about with Bryce, that the important thing is that he had to really step up and be the quarterback for this team, make plays when it was really necessary to bring this team back. And I thought it was a very, I don't want to say Heisman-like performance by Bryce, but it was the kind of performance that you need from your leader to bring you back and win a game where you probably shouldn't be winning it. Jake?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I want to jump kind of on your first point about the unsportsmanlike penalties. There's been a lot of complaining from the TCU side, and I've even seen some national people say about, you know, these pass interference calls at the very end of the game that didn't go TCU's way. That kind of stuff's out of your control, but those unsportsmanlike calls, you know, you're right. Those were killer because if they kick off at the, you know, there were 35 like usual, Baylor's starting at its own 20 again, and you know, that runs more clock, and, you know, who knows what happens. So they opened the door for Baylor, and Baylor barreled through that door from that point on. Something I wrote about on our site on Monday, I think a lot of people might disagree with me, but I think in the end the better team won. I've actually talked to some TCU people who agree with that. When you have a 21-point comeback late in the game, you think not a fluke, but you know, a team kind of just gives it away or whatever. But I think Baylor, looking at the numbers, just how much Baylor outgained TCU, the fact that Baylor had so many more sustained drives compared to TCU. I think the better team won. It just took the best comeback in Baylor history, really. That ties the previous comeback. That's what it took, but I'm really convinced Baylor's the better team.
I think Baylor's I think they've got more talent than TCU. I think Petty's a better quarterback than Boykin, but one of the things that I saw in the game really big time when you looked at the offenses was Baylor owned – the fourth quarter. They wore TCU down. But also, if you looked at the TCU offense, they really don't have a running game. Their running game is Boykin. And they've got some good receivers, but you see this a lot. And, Kevin, I know you cover high school ball. Jake, when you were with Texas football, you covered it. Whenever you see a team that just leans on one player, that team has trouble in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And Boykin slowed down in the fourth quarter. They said they took the ball out of Boykin's hands. I think Boykin was out of gas.
Yeah. I think the other thing to point out, too, is that the one undercurrent for this game was the fact that, you know, TCU, you mentioned about Boykin being the leading rusher, but that's the problem with TCU this year, is that they've just been unable to get anything going with the running game to any extent, and it doesn't matter if it was Baylor or anybody else. They've just had trouble with it, and I think because the fact that that TCU couldn't run it, really was the fact that the reason why the clock was never in TCU's favor, why Baylor had a chance.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm wearing down the defense. Baylor ran 109 offensive plays.
That's incredible. That's ridiculous.
It is, but I mean, to y'all's point, when you adopt an offense like TCU does, you know, you're getting quick scores and you're putting that defense back on the field a lot. That defense is not used to playing that many plays, and it's a very good defense. I still believe it. A good defense can have a bad day, or not bad day, but just get shredded by a good offense, which is what happened. But, you know, without a running game, without the ability, like Baylor does, to you know, get clock-chewing drives at the end of the game, you know, without that, they're putting so much more pressure on their defense.
See, and this goes back to where a team – where you talk about teams that need to be balanced – and why coaches stress that we need to be balanced. This is exactly what hurt TCU, and this is exactly why Baylor won the game. Because one team's run, the one truism for me in football is that you've got to have a running game. And if you do not have a running game, I don't care how much you throw it, but if you do not have a running game, it's just not going to make it's going to make you so much harder to defend. And the fact that Baylor stresses it so much, I still love the fact that people just want to talk about how well they, how deep they throw it, when that's not the crux of their offense. I mean, look, Shaq Linwood, if I'm right on this, Jake and Steven, Shaq Linwood had all the rushing yardage on that game-winning field goal drive, with the exception of the pass interference call. I think Bryce missed a couple of his throws in that possession. If I'm going off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that was the case. So having said that, it just really shows you've got to run the football in order to one, take the will out of the opposing team. And yeah, people would say, gosh, why are they running it against TCU? But TCU was gassed overall, and I think also Baylor's conditioning was a factor. We talk about how well conditioned this Baylor team is year in and year out. You saw that in the fourth quarter. The team that was more conditioned and that was deeper all conspired together to this team winning this game late Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I want to jump back to kind of the big picture thing. I was talking to one of the kind of Baylor bigwigs there after the game, and she said that was more exciting than the Big 12 championship game, and I think it was because this one kind of burst on everybody. The Big 12 championship game, you could see it coming the whole second half. This one just kind of blew people out of the water.
What do you mean Big 12 championship game? You mean against Texas last year?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. The de facto Big 12 championship game. Yeah, this one was out of nowhere. You know, TCU was unranked 2 weeks before this game. They jumped in the top 25. I think they were at 25. And then they beat Oklahoma, and suddenly they're a top 10 team, and Baylor's in its first all top 10 matchup since the 50s. So it did just really come out of nowhere.
Yeah. Now, okay, with the defense giving up the points that they gave up, does that change your impression? Jake, why don't you jump on this one first?
You know, I'm going to say no, because take away the pick six, take away the kickoff return for a touchdown, that's 44 points. That's not acceptable in a Big 12 game, but you also need to factor in that they had a short field on a Bryce Petty interception. They only needed 20 yards to get a field goal in the third quarter. So, I mean, really, you know, now you're thinking 41 points. Still not, I mean, that's not much of a difference. Still not good. But what I think about this is, one, TCU could not run the ball. So Baylor's run defense was just as good as it has been all year.
Right.
And two, look, take away throwing a deep route to Colby Listenbee against Ryan Reed. What does TCU have this game? Nothing. I mean, or whoever you want to call it. Whoever was they were throwing on the outside against Ryan Reed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was their offense. And, you know, you got to credit them. They picked on, they found the weakness of Baylor's defense, and they, you know, they ate it up. But that's just one play, and that's something that Baylor, I think, can get better at. I think Ryan Reed is going to get better, maybe not totally better this season, but throughout his career, because I think he's a talented guy. But, you know, you take away just that one play, and I'm not going to say it's gimmicky, but that's really – the extent of their offense. I mean, they threw underneath sometimes, but for the most part, they made all their, you know, big plays on throwing sideline deep routes. And not many other teams can do that, one. So it's not like you know, that's going to be, I think, something that's going to hold back Baylor the rest of the year. So I think the defense is fine, especially considering what they did in the fourth quarter, too, where they just shut TCU down. So it doesn't concern me at all about the defense.
I feel the same way. Look, this is football is such a week-to-week game, and you get one of these games every now and then where it just kind of takes on a personality of its own, and you don't know why, but it just kind of evolves that way, and I think that's what this one did. I don't know if we're going to see that this weekend in West Virginia, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But I still do not – the other thing I'll point out, too, is, again, football is being played in such a weird dynamic right now, that teams are being so spread out that if you hold somebody to 24 points or less, that's usually a pretty good day, because yards, points are just coming in such easy fashion now that it's just a matter of finding a way to survive these games rather than dominate them, because that's just kind of what, that's the kind of era in football we are in right now. So, you know, my point is that we're just going to have to, I take nothing away. TCU executed, did a great job for three quarters. They kind of got worn down, and Baylor's defense made the plays, made the stops that they had to, especially the most important stop that Ryan Reed made on the fourth down play that obviously gave Baylor a short field that turned into the Chris Callahan game-winning field goal.
Another thing, I don't know if, Steven, you're about to say something, but something I've seen people kind of criticize is that Baylor didn't get a ton of pressure on Trevon Boykin. Baylor had two sacks and I think five tackles for a loss. My counterpoint to that is, I've seen a graphic, I've seen a breakdown of TCU's offense. Their whole mantra, I guess, is for him to release it as soon as possible. That's not a kind of offense where you're gonna have a chance for a lot of sacks, because they want to drop back 2 seconds, throw the ball. You know, if you're getting to the quarterback in 2 seconds, then you have an NFL pass rush at the college level. So, again, it doesn't concern me that Boykin wasn't under fire all night long, because it's just there weren't those kind of opportunities. I do think they could have been a little better getting pressure and especially stopping him from fleeing the pocket and making a play. But again, I don't think the opportunities were there to get a bunch of sacks, not against that kind of offense.
Okay, and what I was going to say is, I think that with Palmer out for the year, I think that the defensive line kind of has to refine its chemistry. You know, they were switching guys around in there. K.J. Smith had the hot hand. Javonte McGee didn't get to play a whole lot. And so I think some of that did take place. I do think you have to remember, I think Baylor's still something like number 3 in the nation in yards per play, and TCU ran 89 plays, so TCU got a lot of plays in that game, and that makes a huge difference. I thought that Ryan Reed, I thought that he had a baptism of fire, and I thought when you started hitting the third and fourth quarter, his play, you could see him growing up on the field.
I agree. I agree. You got to remember, this guy's a first-year starter. He's a I guess, a redshirt sophomore. It's not like he has a ton of experience. He hasn't been counted on since he was 18 years old as a senior in high school. So, you know, some guys aren't going to jump out of the gates like Xavier Howard has. Some guys need a little more time. I was on ESPN 1660 Waco station today, and, you know, I brought up Jason Verrett. His first game was against Baylor in 2011, and he got shredded all night long. You know, 3 years later, he's a first-round draft pick. That's not going to necessarily happen to Ryan Reed, but you just—it's kind of unreasonable expectations to think this guy can be a shutdown corner 6 games into his starting career. You know, he's learning, and I think you're right, Steven. I think he's starting to catch on, and it showed in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I still think that the most impressive things about the linebackers is that we're really not talking about the linebackers. They're taking care of business. When they needed them to blitz in the TCU game, they were able to blitz. And when they needed to drop into coverage, they could do that. And they're not blowing plays, and they're getting in position, and they're making stops. One of the things about Boykin, though, is that he is probably – he's a lot faster than Swoops was last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And that guy runs. I mean, they run. It's like the old triple option. So, you know, sacking Boykin is not going to be easy because that guy is very fast and he's very elusive. Okay. Now, the fourth quarter, Baylor just blew up and did what everybody was kind of expecting of Baylor. Kevin, do you think they can keep that up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they can. I mean, this goes back to depth, Stephen, because the fact that you know, they're so deep along the defensive front, they're so deep at wide receiver, and obviously as long as you keep Bryce Petty healthy and he can handle it, then I think that they can win it. I mean, football is such about attrition anyway that if – you know, they get into these games like they showed the other – like they showed against TCU that they were just more ready. And we could even go back to the Texas game where that thing was just a case where Baylor just had more answers than Texas did in the second half and pretty much just wore out Texas in the second half to pull away and win that game. And I think you're going to see this and see that – you know, I was just doing a show earlier this evening with the West Virginia folks about this. And I said, you know, I said, the one thing that you're going to have to watch is how deep Baylor is. And I said, if it's tight and if it's fourth quarter, it's going to see, does West Virginia have enough answers on defense to match Baylor? And I said, I don't think so. I said, I think what we're finding out here, guys, is that Baylor might be the deepest team in the Big 12, if not one of the top five deepest teams in college football.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, you know, Briles has been around long enough to – Every guy on his team is a Briles recruit, and they've recruited really well. So, you know, it makes sense. And you know, if you're a Baylor coach, knock on wood, aside from the receiver injuries earlier and then maybe some minor ones, Chafin or Johnny Jefferson, this team has avoided, you know, the real critical injuries that they didn't avoid last year. There's still 6 games to be played, and you got to figure injuries will happen. But so far, the depth hasn't really, other than a receiver, hasn't really had to be tested at all.
Yeah, but I do think that there's a key thing on the injuries, and that is that we had, like, you know, I won't list all of them, but we had the starting receivers, Chafin and Petty, all miss a lot of time in non-conference. So for them all to be on the field together, TCU was really kind of like the second game of the season for them.
I agree. Yeah.
And
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just the only thing about that is that they really started getting their rhythm in that fourth quarter,
mm-hmm.
And I think that establishing that rhythm is a huge thing. And what have we been saying about the offense all season is that, man, they just don't look like they're in sync like we're used to seeing from Baylor.
Yeah, we've been saying all along, and. I, you know, one thing that dawned on me is that Briles always says, you know, I'm reading one of his biographies right now. You know, he says he doesn't fit players into an offense. He fits his offense to the players. And, you know, there's some new personnel this year. The running backs are really different than what they had last year. You got Katie Cannon in the system. Some new offensive linemen. So you know, there's new personnel. There's going to be some changes there. And then you have these injuries. Petty misses a game and a half. So it's been hard, like you said, Steven, for this offense to find that rhythm, because they really haven't had the chance to play with each other until I wouldn't even say the Iowa State game was the first. I guess technically everyone was healthy, but they obviously weren't ready yet, and they didn't show it against Texas either. But when you turn it on and you find your rhythm against the best defense in the Big 12 when the game was on the line, I think this offense is ready to go back to the original question. I think this offense is very capable of producing like they did in the fourth quarter, partly because they did it for six or seven games last year. You know, they were that rhythmic last year early in the season, and I think they're capable of doing it again. I don't necessarily think they're going to do it for four straight quarters every week, but I think they can find that stride during a game where they go on a scoring spree of three, four, or five straight touchdowns, and that's like a knockout punch in boxing. If you do that, if you get those kind of runs in football, there are very few teams that can keep up.
Okay, I'm going to throw two quick takeaways in there, and you guys can give a couple of takeaways. We had talked last week about, hey, are they going to pull the red shirt off Terrence Williams? I think when you see Coleman and Goodley at running back, we've got our answer on that. They're not pulling the red shirt off Terrence Williams.
Yeah.
If they can possibly avoid it. And the second takeaway I have is that they're going to figure out some way to get the ball in Corey Coleman's hands as many times as they can.
Corey Coleman, Antoine Goodley, and Katie Cannon. Bryles said it in the postgame. They want to go 1-5-9. Those are the jersey numbers for those guys. He's obviously identified who his biggest playmakers are. You know, Jay Lee's going to make plays. I think Clay Fuller might work back in there eventually. Levi Norwood, too. But those three are clearly the best of that group, and it looks like they're going to emphasize them. And Steven, great point. It was a really interesting thing to see Corey Coleman line up in the backfield. And I'll tell you what, he looked like he knew what he was doing.
You know, the thing about Corey is that maybe we shouldn't be surprised by this just because he was so versatile when he was playing high school ball at Richardson-Pierce.
Yep.
But, of course, we all look at him as a wide receiver, and so it just kind of caught us off guard and we didn't even think about it. But as soon as he had that first down carry in the first half, I thought, you know what, that does kind of make sense just because of what he can do. And, no, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if for some reason, I'm not saying West Virginia, but maybe somewhere down the road they got something to line up for him so that he can throw it.
I agree. I can see.
Corey might be the most versatile, and I'm going to profess myself to be the president of the Corey Coleman fan club. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. But the thing is that he's so versatile and he's so athletic and he gives you so many options. What we saw on Saturday was the reason why I said this is so important to get him back when he came back for Iowa State. We're seeing that now. And the fact that he's healthy, I think he's capable of having a Big 12, an all Big 12 type of season. And his presence on this offense is going to be so important moving forward, health permitting.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's talk West Virginia. What do you say?
Okay, when we come back, we are going to jump into West Virginia. What's coming up? What's happening? And we'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Kevin, what has been going on in recruiting?
Well, they had a good turnout for the TCU game last Saturday. You know, probably about 35 kids that were there approximately. I mean, several of the commits were there. Patrick Hudson, the highest-ranking commit in Baylor history from Salisbury, was there. Blake Lynch, the star, and Jamichael Hasty, the three Rivals 250 kids were there from the 2015 class. There's a couple of kids that we wrote about back in the spring, back in May, from Trophy Club Byron Nelson and a Kellen Deeshan offensive lineman. and also Brandon Bowen, who's probably going to be a wide receiver when he's being recruited. A couple of 2016 kids were there as well. Deesh came out with an offer from Baylor. He's an offensive lineman by trade, about 6'7", 265. We have the story up on the site. And, you know, great turnout. Of course, the reaction, we had a reaction from all the players who were there talking about what they saw from Baylor's comeback. Obviously, you know, some of them thought it was the greatest game that they've ever seen. So I think Baylor's, you know, they're still continuing to offer, still continuing to evaluate. There was also some positive news on Gilmer defensive back Chris Boyd. He had a tweet Sunday night talking about saying how he could see himself over at Baylor. Of course, you know, he was at the A&M game on Saturday night and watched the Aggies kind of get it handed to them by Ole Miss, and I'm sure that didn't go over very well with him. but we do know that he's been in conversations with the Carlton Buckles, the defensive backs coach. And, you know, when kids throw tweets out there, you got to kind of check in to see into the legitimacy of them. And I've checked around with a couple people who are familiar with this, and it seems to be pretty bona fide that he's pretty interested in them. And I think that two things are probably going to happen. Baylor's going to have their bye week the week of the 24th and the 25th, so the coaches will be back out on the road evaluating kids and maybe extending an offer or two. And I'm sure they'll be over at Gilmer's next game, you know, the week of that Gilmer game. I think they're playing Hubbard. And I think that's going to be pretty important for them to kind of see where they are at with him, maybe try and get him to, if not official visit, maybe unofficial for homecoming against Kansas. I still know that they're still trying to work on DeMarcus Lodge, the Cedar Hill wide receiver. I don't know when that's going to happen. It kind of sounds like Lodge is going to be going to LSU, if not this weekend, maybe the next weekend. Maybe if they do get Lodge to official, it's probably going to be later in November. Could be in January, just the way this is going. I think with Lodge, it's probably going to go all the way down to February 4th of 2015. And so I think they're just kind of making some progress either way. You know, I do know that Darian Daniels, the defensive tackle from Bishop Dunn, is going to schedule or has scheduled a visit, an official visit for Baylor. I'm trying to get the date confirmed on this to find out exactly when it is. And so that's kind of the most of it right now. And, of course, with basketball, you know, they had a couple of big-time visitors last week. Jake Lindsey, who was already committed, the kid out of Utah, who's the son of Dennis Lindsey, the great former Baylor player. He was down for his official visit last week. Also was the five-star center Scalabessary. I know I'm not saying it right, but anyway.
You know French at all. Do you know French at all, Kevin?
Exactly. You're Mr. Brussels, and so but anyway, he was in as well for an official visit. Baylor was his last official visit. We don't know when there's going to be an announcement made on his decision, but the fact that Baylor has gotten into this to the number four player in the country and expecting a decision from that is a pretty big-time thing for them to be involved with him. Who knows where that's going to go? Everyone's just not – no one has any idea where he's leading.
The scuttlebutt is – and I'm glad I finally got to use the word scuttlebutt in this podcast.
Good for you.
But it is that it had been a two-team race between Memphis and Kentucky. Scalabessière, that's my best French attempt there. He lives in Memphis, so there's a connection there. And then Calipari has been known to get a good recruit or two at Kentucky. But you know, I really do think it is those two teams to beat, but Baylor does have the chance, and he's a hard guy to get a hold of, Scalabessière is, but he had some very positive tweets on Twitter, and in this day and age, sometimes that's all you can go by when these guys don't answer their phones. So I think Baylor does have a chance. I would put it, you know, below 20%, but there's still that chance. I'm glad you did bring up Chris Boyd, because that seems to have some legs to it, the Gilmer defensive back. And, you know, one, Baylor's playing well, and they've got a great new stadium, and there's a lot of excitement. But two, Blake Lynch, his teammate, who's the Baylor commit, you know, that guy is on fire about Baylor as any recruit for any school in the country. And he's actively recruiting Boyd on Baylor's behalf. So, you know, things like that can help, and let's, you know, let's be honest. Baylor is a defending Big 12 champ, and they're top five right now, and there's a chance they'll make the playoff, and that resonates with four- and five-star guys. So I think Baylor has a solid shot here, and the chances keep growing, especially when you just win. And like you, I think you said, or maybe Steven said, going to an A&M game where nine-tenths of the stadium is empty before the game's over, and that's going to leave an impression too. So that's a really interesting one to follow, because I thought Baylor had no chance just 2 months ago, but it seems like that's changed.
Right. And then two other things just to let you know before we transition into talking about West Virginia is that, one, speaking of Lynn Shake, last week he was invited to the U.S. Army All-American Bowl January 3rd down in San Antonio, so congratulations to him. If you're not familiar with that bowl, that was the one that both Davian Hall and Katie Cannon were at last in January, playing in that game. And then finally on the basketball front, Admon Gilder, the Dallas Madison four-star guard, is going to be making his decision and our commitment decision known Thursday morning around 11 o'clock. Baylor is considered one of the finalists for this. It seems to be thinking that Oklahoma State is the team to beat in here. If that was true, maybe Baylor is the second choice in there, although I did see something from Eric Bossy today somewhere else saying that SMU might be moving in on, because SMU got that guard Shake Milton out of Oklahoma, who Baylor had liked quite a bit, but then Shake had taken Baylor off of his finalists about a month and a half ago. So just a couple of other basketball things before we move on.
Yeah, well, let's get back to football, because I think that's what people are listening for right now. 6-0 going to West Virginia. It's funny, Baylor's offense has a hard time reproducing the same rhythm on the road. And I think the one exception, or maybe not the one, but the one that comes to mind first was 2012 at West Virginia. Your offense scored 63 points. Obviously, it was a loss, but it has been done at West Virginia before. So, you know, I think if Baylor scores 63 points Saturday, they win by three or four touchdowns. Steven, what do we have? What's our first topic of this game?
Well, the first thing that we're wondering about is there any chance of a letdown against West Virginia?
I will say yes and no. I think overall, no, it's not going to be a total letdown game. I don't think Baylor's going to be flat for four quarters, but I could see Baylor starting slow, because that's kind of what's happened on the road at Iowa State and at Texas. And so it might be irrelevant to the TCU game, but again, it's just kind of harder on the road to start fast. So, you know, in some ways I think there will be a little letdown early on in the game. Won't be surprised if West Virginia gets up early, but for the most part, for the entire game, I don't think there will be a letdown, because, you know, this team is 6-0. It has a huge goal in front of it, and it knows it has to win each week. You know, the game at Oklahoma won't matter as much if you lose to West Virginia. And then secondly, they have a bye after this week. They can leave it all out on the field, you know, so to speak, on Saturday, knowing they'll have 2 weeks off before their next game. So, you know, I think we're going to see, other than maybe a slow start, you know, some maximum effort and no letdown from Baylor.
I think that I'm going to mirror what Jake said. I think there could be kind of a flat start to this thing, plus the fact they're going to be starting out on the road. I think that first quarter could be a little bit choppy. Then I do think they'll kind of find their groove, if you will, and kind of get back on it.
Yeah.
I think West Virginia obviously is coming off some momentum with a last-second field goal to beat Texas Tech and Lubbock, so they've got a lot of energy, which was an important game for West Virginia as far as the Mountaineers wanting to get bowl eligible this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I do think West Virginia is going to give them everything they've got. I do think this is going to be a four-quarter game. I know we'll talk about the predictions here in a little bit, but I do think – and the other thing I'll point out about this game, guys, is that I do think that this is probably going to be the most balanced team that Baylor is going to see to this point of the year. I mean, think about it. Iowa State kind of didn't do either thing on offense very well, passing or throwing.
Yeah.
Texas was a better running team than a passing team, and Baylor, you know, Texas got some yards rushing, but, you know, obviously they shut down Tyrone Swoops in the passing game. You can throw it pretty well, but they can't run it well. With West Virginia, you know, Clint Trickett's having a great year. fifth-year quarterback, understands the offense, really seems to have come into his own. He's got an outstanding wide receiver, freak athlete in Kevin White.
Yeah.
But then they're pretty balanced offensively in the with the running game with Rochelle Shell and Lynn Smallwood. And then you've got Andrew Bowie, even though Bowie's not the feature back like he was a couple years ago because he left the program and then came back. But what I'm saying is that they've got more options in the running game so that they can kind of offset that. And there's just more offensive options. And so Baylor's going to be, I think, tested both sides or both ways on offense than they were against either TCU or Texas.
Yeah, one of the things, whenever you talk about a letdown game, but I think that they were working. You could tell Monday they were already working to put TCU behind them. And there's no way you overlook West Virginia. This team is 4-2. Their only two losses are to Alabama when they were ranked number 2 and to Oklahoma when they were ranked number 4. And neither one of those was like a blowout, horrible loss.
Not at all.
And they are 2-1 in the Big 12. And you know what? Baylor doesn't pay attention, and this puts West Virginia atop the Big 12 if West Virginia takes this game this weekend, because now they're 3-1, and everybody else in the conference has a loss.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't think this is there's any chance that Baylor overlooks them. I think, maybe they might have a little trouble matching their top potential offensively or even defensively, but I don't expect any kind of letdown at all. That's just not with this team with so much on the line. And, again, the fact that, once you end the game on Saturday, you got 2 weeks before your next game.
Yeah, I think teams that are driven, that are focused, who know they're really good and know that they've got something big in front of them and that they know they can absolutely play for it, kind of have a way of compartmentalizing things. And I think what we're finding out is gaining the ability to do that. If they were putting the TCU game behind them as quickly as we think they were and starting to look forward to going to Morgantown, then that's a really good sign. As emotional as that TCU game is, I still think that's going to be a little bit of a carryover, just because when you are playing your arch rival like that, the way that game finished, that is going to happen. And so you just got to find a way to, you've just got to find a way to make it work, and just deal with those types of elements before you move on, before you can kind of move on. But I do think this team is capable of doing such things.
Something Briles led off his press conference with on Monday is, some coaches say we got to forget about that win and move on. Briles said something different. He said, we're going to write it. I like that. Basically, look, we played a hell of a game at the end. Let's bottle that up and bring it on to our next game. Let's ride that momentum instead of trying to forget about it. Obviously, you don't want to think, how great you are because we came back and beat TCU in the fourth quarter, but, just try to reproduce what you did in that fourth quarter, the defense getting stops and the offense moving it at will. I like that kind of mindset of riding that momentum and not forgetting it.
Yeah, keep the emotion, but look forward, not back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, and one of the things where I think Baylor has a pretty good thing going on with it is that they know West Virginia. Hogerson and Briles have, coached together on the same team. So Baylor's defense sees what West Virginia does on offense, or what they try to do on offense, in practice every day. And so I think that kind of helps the Baylor defense a little bit. What expectations do y'all have for the defense going into this game? Kevin, why don't you jump on this one?
I think what we'll see is a defense that will play with a little bit more purpose. Not that they never play with purpose, but I think a little bit more. They'll probably say that they were embarrassed by what happened with the TCU game, and that's not them. I do think that they'll – West Virginia's had some issues with its offensive line, and I do think that Baylor will take advantage of that. It's not very mobile in the pocket. He can kind of sidestep some people, but as far as like running away from people, like maybe Bryce Petty can't, no. So I think I expect a much more efficient effort, as difficult as playing on the road is, but I think that they'll be fine. And I think that they will give a far better account of themselves. I'm not going to predict a score or point total or yardage total because that's you can never predict those things. But I think that we'll see a defense that will fly around with the football even more than what we saw. I can also see them getting a couple of turnovers, you know, maybe three, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you say you can't predict a point total. We're going to have to do that in the next segment, Kevin. So my expectation.
That's the tease.
Okay, that was nice work. That was a subtle tease. Man, that's good. My expectation, I haven't picked a score yet. I'm going to do that on the break in my head. But I'm going to say I think this defense can expect to hold West Virginia to 30 points or less. That's probably a bold or aggressive expectation, but I think the defense is good enough to do that. Will they do it? I don't know because, you know, West Virginia scored in the mid-30s against Oklahoma, which has a pretty good defense, but I think Baylor should expect, that's what they should expect of themselves, is to go in there. I think they'll expect to do better than that. I just don't think it's going to happen because West Virginia has a very good offense and an offense that will get a lot of chances just because of the nature of Baylor's offense. But you're talking about big plays. I think Baylor needs 3 or 4 sacks. You know, Baylor didn't have a takeaway against TCU, did they? Or was there?
No, Baylor did not have any turnovers against TCU unless you want to count the
bad snap on
the head on the punt at the end of the first half.
Baylor needs to force him this week. I think there might have been opportunities for maybe Ryan Reed to get an interception last week if he could have made a play on the ball, but I think you want to force a couple because turnovers on the road, that's a huge boost to a defense and your offense as well. So I'm looking at 30 or below points and a couple turnovers. Those are, I guess if I can quantify expectations, that's how I do it.
My expectations are, I'll make them quick, is just I want to see the defensive line kind of get their chemistry and their mojo back, and I'd like to see Reed build on what he had going on in the fourth quarter. If they can do that, I think everything else will be fine.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, what's the one thing you're looking for in this game, Jake?
I'm looking for Bryce Petty to build on his fourth quarter. He was okay to good against TCU for the first three quarters. He was great in the fourth quarter. And that's what you want out of your senior quarterback, a guy who's on Heisman list. You want him to be great. My key to the TCU game last week, if I had to pick one key to the game, it was for him to have a turnaround from the Texas game, and he did. I don't think he has to be outstanding to beat West Virginia because I think Baylor is going to be able to run the ball pretty well against West Virginia's defense, but the one thing I want to see is a confident Bryce Petty plays smart but also takes the risks when he has to and just makes plays, and I'd like to see him pass for more than 60% completion percentage because he hasn't been doing that lately. That's the one thing I want to see.
Kevin?
For me, I want to see Shockland would keep doing at this pace. You know, the Baylor has talked about the fact that they want to limit his number of carries in a game. Obviously, they run 109 plays, and your top running back is going to get a quarter of those. But you know, I think what we've seen with Shock in these last two games, with 28 carries against Texas and 29 carries against TCU, demonstrates that he's a guy that can handle the workload. Maybe one game it's an anomaly. A second game kind of shows you he's kind of got it. And if you're me, what I've seen from Shock in these two games, he's like those really good running backs. As the game gets longer, he gets better, and he's been getting better in these. I mean, again, he was the one who got the yards in the game-winning drive that set up, you know, for the field goal. And I think I want to see him with another 25 to 30 carry performance if that's the way this game is going to go again. Because number one, I think he can handle it. Number two, I think Baylor has no problem leaning on him now.
Steven, what's the one thing you want to see?
I want to see the offensive line protect Petty just a little bit more.
Hmm.
I think they did pretty good, but he went a long time without having any sacks, and I think Texas got a couple of sacks and then TCU got a few sacks. I'd like to see the offensive line. The running game has really started rocking, and you know, early in the year we said, hey, the passing protection's great, the running game's not up, and now I'd like to see them. If they can do that, they're going to be very hard to beat. That's pretty much it for me in terms of what I want to look for. I do think, Kevin, you mentioned Shock, and I think he had 28 carries in the Texas game, and Bryle said he wanted him to carry less, and then he had 29 in TCU. So the workload didn't get any shorter. Jake, you mentioned when we were talking about the defense, I still come back, I'd really like to see, and, you know, stealing Iron Thunder, I'd really like to see Ryan Reed build on what he did last week. If he
does
that, I think that everything's going to be cool.
Real quick before we end the segment, Kevin, I'm impressed with your brain. Baylor's last drive, every single yard outside of the penalty, pass interference, did come from Shock Linwood. You know, he delivered. The offensive line delivered. So, good work by your brain. That's a good memory.
I think it was because when I was writing up the post-game summary, I looked at that drive, and it just kind of stuck with me. You know, you can write a bunch of stuff and kind of forget it the next day, but for some reason, that just kind of stood out to me.
Good deal. All right, well, let's move on. I want to talk the rest of the world of college football, so let's take a break.
Okay, and when we come back, national games and around the Big 12. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. And now we're going to go around the nation and around the Big 12. And we only picked two national games to talk about this week because really most of the interesting games are in the Big 12 this week. And so we didn't want to throw a bunch of dog games out there for y'all to cover, particularly TCU after I got skunked by them last week. Our first one that we're talking about, and this is going to have some implications for Baylor if Baylor can take care of business at West Virginia. Number 5, Notre Dame at number 2, Florida State. Kevin, what is your prediction?
Wow. I guess I'm going to go lean into to Florida State, pending if Jameis Winston plays because of this autographing situation that's going on there. You know, this is they're investigating it. They're finding out to this point, based on what he also told them, which you know, we already know how good Jameis Winston's word is these days. But he says he wasn't paid for these autographs. And it's just another distraction for this Florida State program. I could see Notre Dame going in there to win this game at Doak Campbell Stadium. Especially if Florida State's dealing with distractions. I mean, they probably should have lost to Clemson when he was suspended for the first time. But I'm going to just stick with Florida State just because I still think their speed across the board is going to be a far telling element in this game. And Winston is a difference maker. Look, as much as he might be viewed as a pariah in a lot of other circles, he still finds a way to get his team to rally around him, and I think that's the thing that really makes the difference. Everett Golson, having a great year for Notre Dame, probably will get himself into the Heisman Trophy candidacy race if he hasn't already, but he'll definitely do it. He finds a way to win down there this weekend. But I'm going to go with the Noles here in a game that will probably be closer than people think it is.
Jake?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Florida State too because I mean, people love to talk about Jameis Winston for good reason. He's a lightning rod, a la Johnny Manziel. But Florida State has tons of athletes on defense too, and I think you know some of the SEC or their ACC speed can be overblown sometimes, but I do think it will be a difference for Notre Dame, and I you're right, Kevin. Clemson almost won there, but I mean that Winston thing blew up that week. There were distractions then. I think the distractions now are not quite the same, especially since Winston should be on the field. I'd be shocked if he doesn't play.
Right.
So, you know, I agree. I think it'll be close, but I'll be surprised if Florida State does not win.
Okay, I'm going to go with Notre Dame.
Oh.
And I'm going with Notre Dame for a couple of reasons. Number one, Notre Dame is one of those schools, they're kind of, you know, when you talk about blue bloods, Notre Dame's it. And so they are used to being the hated team showing up on another field. That is not a big deal to them. That's Saturday. So I don't think that playing away from home affects Notre Dame as much as it does some teams. When you're talking about Jameis Winston and his success, I love the quote. It was what one of the Cowboys offensive linemen said about Clint Longley many years ago. He called it the triumph of the uncluttered mind. And the thing about Winston is that I really don't think any of this stuff bothers him, but it has got to start affecting the rest of the team. And so, you know, whether Winston plays or not, they're getting a bunker mentality down there right now. And this much stuff has got to affect you on the field. I do agree that Florida State has more speed than Notre Dame. I don't think I've ever heard Notre Dame and speed used in the same phrase. But I just think Notre Dame's going to hang around, and I think they're going to find a way to win. And I think Florida State's actually kind of vulnerable this year.
I really think, though, that this is going to be the best secondary that Golson's going to face this year. I know Stanford's a really good team, and that's a very physical team, but they play a different style. But I think the secondary that Florida State's got is as good, has a couple of pro prospects on it. I think that's going to be the greater test for Golson.
Okay, moving along. We have the team that, I don't know about you, Kevin, but the team that Jake and I love to hate, which is the Texas A&M Aggies, and they are currently ranked number 21, cause SEC, playing at number 7, Alabama. And so, I'll go ahead and jump on this one. I think Alabama takes this. I don't think A&M has just a whole lot of defense, and I'm not sure how much offense Alabama has. This is a good Alabama team, but it's not a classic Alabama team.
No.
But, no, it's not. It's not. I agree. It wouldn't surprise me if A&M won, only because I don't think Alabama is as great this year. But I obviously, I'm going to pick Alabama in this. I think if A&M had beaten Lamar, which is on its schedule, in the first week of the season instead of South Carolina, they might not be receiving votes right now. But they rode a lot of momentum off of that win over South Carolina, and you know, the pollsters have a hard time dropping a team from number 5 to completely out of the poll, especially, like you said, Stephen, when they're in the SEC. They don't deserve their ranking right now. They could prove me wrong by winning at Alabama, but I don't see that happening.
I'm going to go with the Tide here. You know, Blake Sims has not been playing very well here the last couple of weeks. Look, Alabama scored 31 points the last two games, which is – not only have they lost a game in there, but they probably should have lost to Arkansas if the SEC officials hadn't blown a game on the field goal. But at the same time, that's neither here nor there. This offense is kind of starting to sputter a little bit. And if this defense, they're going to probably have to lean on this defense a little bit more against A&M. I do think that Kenny Hill is regressing a little bit. I mean, he looked really, really ordinary against Ole Miss last week. Ole Miss just ate him up. And really, the yards and the touchdowns he scored in the fourth quarter were so after the fact. It really, you don't even look at it and give it that much credit, with all due respect. You know, I think this is going to be a pretty close game. I think the Tide's going to win it, but I think that it's a game where obviously A&M needs this if they're going to have any hope for trying to stay in at least the SEC West race, which is obviously a long shot as it is.
Yeah.
The thing that A&M doesn't do well, guys, and I know we may have talked about it one podcast, or A&M does not run the football very well.
No, they don't. They have good running backs, too.
That's one thing that they've talked, you know, for all their great recruiting with Trey Williams and Trey Carson and those guys. Williams, you know, Williams was a great kid coming out of the Houston area, and everyone just fell in love with his speed. But he's not big enough, and he's just getting pounded. And I think that there's a real problem there with A&M's running game. And when you can't run it, again, this is kind of similar to the TCU discussion. When you can't run it effectively, it really puts a lot more heat on your passing game because people can just pin their ears back and go after you with the passing game. And I think that's where A&M is finding. Not only is their defense pretty much a funnel, but their running game is really impacting how much this offense can click as much as it would like to.
It's funny you mentioned Alabama offense struggling. I mean, the cure for that is the A&M defense. Right. You know, Baylor was in that position. I remember in 2010, 2011, 2009, too. It's like these teams would struggle on offense and suddenly have career days against Baylor's defense. You know, that's changed for Baylor. It hasn't for A&M. They're still pretty bad. So,
right.
Well, one of the things, too, about A&M, when you're talking about their troubles running the ball, they graduated most of their really just that they had an awesome offensive line, and they graduated a lot of that.
I think they only lost two starters because they thought they were going to lose their tackle, and I'm not going to Cedric, whatever his last name is. They had three starters back, and they had some good recruiting talent there. What I've heard is that it's just a matter of coaching. I mean, Mike Sherman, when he was there, he recruited well, but he was an offensive line specialist. And you don't have that anymore, and I think coaching and technique means a lot at this level, and perhaps the coaching's not up to the, you know, the same level that Sherman had. So anyway, enough about the Aggies. What else do we have?
Something bad about Kevin Sumlin. Okay, but by the way, now we know why I got a helicopter. It's to get out of the game after a loss. Okay, now we go into the Big 12, and there are some really great games this week in the Big 12. And let's start out with number 14, Kansas, at number 11, Oklahoma.
That would be Kansas State.
Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, quick correction, Kansas State. Kansas is number 14 in the Big 12 rankings right now. Yes.
Did I say Kansas? Kansas State, sorry.
You did say Kansas. That's all right. I knew what you meant. Everybody else would have, too. You know, I haven't put a ton of thought into these as we're talking about them. I want to pick Kansas State because I think Oklahoma, it's just not as good as people thought they were starting the year. But I have a hard time picking road teams. So I'm going to pick Oklahoma in this, and that would be a big win for Oklahoma to, you know, put itself – because Kansas State theoretically has a chance at a Big 12 title. I think it's really a three-team race between Oklahoma, TCU, and Baylor. But I think Oklahoma can almost eliminate Kansas State with a win this weekend.
I'm going to go with the Sooners only because they're at home. If this game was in Manhattan, I'd go with K-State.
Yep.
You know, Kansas State is also having some issues trying to run the ball effectively this year, and Oklahoma's been okay. You know, Samaje Perine's having a great year for him, so that's a great thing that they got for him, and that could be the difference maker. But let's face it, guys, Trevor Knight better get his act together. You know, you can say that you could call it the curse of Katy Perry on him, but
no,
he has got to get it together here because he is just playing flat-out lousy football. He was terrible against TCU, especially in the second half. And he was extremely average against Texas last week.
Average is a compliment for last week. I mean, he wasn't good last week.
No. And, you know, the fact that Bob Stoops was even asked about him in the Big 12 coaches call this week about this, and Bob did the appropriate thing by saying, I'm not going to call him out here because it's just not the way we do things, and I get that. But, look, it doesn't take a blind man to figure out that your quarterback isn't playing very well. And I think, Jake, you know, the one thing you and I have talked about throughout the course of the offseason was they're so living off his performance in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama. And, you know, sooner or later this is going to come out, and sure enough, we're seeing it. And, you know, this is the guy that they've got to ride with, though, for the rest of the season because they moved Blake Bell to a tight end spot. So, you know, they're going to have to ride this wave. And I could see Oklahoma losing two or three games this year. I really could. I don't think that'll happen this weekend.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, and I'm going to go OU. I'd love to go against y'all and pick Kansas State, but Oklahoma is at home. But when I look at Kansas State, they've beaten Texas Tech, they've beaten Stephen F. Austin, Iowa State, and UTEP, and they've lost to Auburn. I don't see, I hate to sound like a media guy, but I don't see a signature win, and I hate that term, but they haven't won against a really good team yet. And I think Oklahoma's a little bit better, but I think they may need to think about putting Bell back at quarterback at Oklahoma and maybe running the triple option for a while or something, because Trevor Knight's not getting it done.
I think it's too late for moving Bell back this
year. It's definitely too late. I mean, this is Knight's team, for better or for worse.
Well, I was being facetious.
I know.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to use that word on the podcast.
There we go. We're knocking them out.
Okay, we're going with Oklahoma. And all right, and the next one is number 15, Oklahoma State, at number 12, TCU. Now, we asked about Baylor having a hangover. Kevin, you think TCU has a hangover?
They probably will. I mean, you can't lead a game for, 59 minutes and 56 seconds? And only to have it not come away with a win. I think that I like the Horned Frogs to win this game, and I'm going to pick them to win it. This is Oklahoma State's first visit to Fort Worth, oddly, because the Big 12 scheduling quirk. TCU's made two consecutive visits up to Stillwater. I think Oklahoma State has the better quarterback in Dax Garmon, I'll say that. And I think Oklahoma State is a bit more balanced offensively, though Mike Gundy's still not. And yes, I know I am committing treason by going against Gundy here. I know that, so God forgive me. But I think I'm going to go TCU here because I still think Oklahoma State's youth still shows up every now and then. And they had their first true road game of the year last year at KU, or last week rather, at KU, and they needed a kickoff return.
Yeah.
Who actually might be one of the top five fastest guys in the conference. That kid can flat out move. I think TCU wins this game by like a touchdown, 10 points. But for Oklahoma State to win, Dax Garmon's going to have to play really, really well. Oklahoma State's going to have to force a couple turnovers, and Tyreek Hill is going to have about 10 touches.
I'm going to pick TCU as well, but I think, one, TCU could be a little hungover, and two, I think a young team has to learn how to win on the road, and Oklahoma State right now is a young team, and, I remember in 2011, Baylor needed overtime to win at Kansas, which was just as bad then as it is now. So I don't want to read into that too much, because that was, I think, Baylor's first road game back then, and that was Oklahoma State's first this year, other than the neutral site with Florida State. So I think Oklahoma State will be better this week than they were against Kansas. But you said Dax Garmon's better than Trevon Boykin. I disagree. Having watched him, he's got the arm, but the accuracy is not there. He throws a great deep ball, but the underneath and the middle routes just aren't there with him right now. I don't think he's as good as Boykin. So I'm going to pick TCU, but I think it's going to be a close one, a very close one. And, they're 15 and 12 in the rankings, so it should be close.
Okay, I may be getting ready to go down the tubes, but I'm taking Oklahoma State.
I like the pick, Stephen. I like the pick.
Great pick.
Yeah, I know y'all do, because you'll put you one more ahead of me in the But I think TCU is going to have a hangover.
Someone has to represent Gundy this week.
So Wyoming.
Yeah, I've got to send flowers to Gundy. But I don't know. I just have a gut feeling about this game. I think TCU is going to be seriously hungover. And, they had the rumors on the fan side about Trevon Boykin's having a broken wrist. He may not have a broken wrist, but, I don't know if y'all saw that photo I posted up on the site of Boykin getting that hit in the fourth quarter. And he got nailed all day long on Saturday, and I think he's still going to be hurting. Oklahoma State is, I think, better and I'm going Oklahoma State. All right, and one I accidentally jumped over, and so let's go back and grab that. Kansas State at Texas.
Stephen,
is Tech.
You've called Kansas State Kansas, and now you've called Kansas Kansas State.
Yeah, I know. It's bad.
You must not have any friends in the Sunflower State.
And I'm going to – I'm not sure I have any friends at all other than you two. But anyway, I'll jump on this one first, and I may go down the tubes. I'm picking Kansas.
I knew you would.
And I'm telling you, man, that OSU game against Kansas going down to the wire, Kansas has played better – under their new interim coach than they ever did under Weiss, and they're going to knock somebody off, okay? And Texas Tech is reeling right now.
I'm going to strongly disagree, and I think Texas Tech wins by 14 to 21 points because I disagree with you. I think Kansas maybe played harder, but they're still not very good. And I know Texas Tech is not very good, but that's the kind of offense that can overwhelm someone. Look, if Tech loses, Texas Tech's administration is gonna ask for their money back from Coach Bro. The love affair will be over. I mean, you cannot lose at home to Kansas right now, and I just don't see that happening.
I'm going to go with Tech here for the reasons why I just think Kansas is so inept offensively. Michael Cummings, who apparently is now the starting quarterback, did play pretty well, but there's just not enough playmakers on there. I mean, Tony Pearson got moved back from wide receiver back to running back because they just don't have any options at running back, even though I thought that Corey Avery, the true freshman from Dallas, has done okay. But with Tech is its own worst enemy with turnovers and penalties every week. They had 12 more miscues against West Virginia last week. They're on a four-game losing streak. They are not playing well, but they can still score. And I still think, and they're going to have enough to beat KU by several touchdowns in this game. I think Kansas is done winning for the year.
And we're going to see. I may be crazy, but I just think that Ballin has got it set for them. Okay, and next one, Iowa State at Texas. And Texas is – talk about a team that's reeling. I was on a Texas message board, and they said, I think Iowa State may be our finest hour. And when your big game goes to being against Iowa State, I think you got problems.
See, I'm going to disagree with the reeling part. I think Texas knows they're bad, but also knows they're getting a lot of effort and great performance out of their defense. So I guess in one way they are reeling, but I don't see it that way. I think they're just kind of a bad offensive team that is going to be in games because of a great defense, and I think that defense can shut down Iowa State. It did a heck of a job against Baylor and Oklahoma, and I don't think Iowa State has the offense of either of those. I'm going to pick Texas to win. I won't be surprised with any result in this game, but I think Texas will win.
I'll go with Texas to win. Iowa State's offense is not that great.
Yeah.
Sam Richardson played pretty well against a very, a high-scoring, but a Mid-American Conference team in Toledo last week, which I was so close on the Rockets last week, guys. I was so close in getting that one last week. But anyway.
Horseshoes and hand grenades, Kevin.
I know. But anyway.
And I do want to make it clear, I was picking Texas. I just think that Texas is having a really down year. But Iowa State has reached the mode where they're complaining about officials and getting fined, and like they did last year. So, yeah, I think Iowa State's ready to close up shop for the year.
Yeah, I'll go with Texas to win the game. Probably, first one to 24 wins, but I think Texas wins. And also give credit to Tyrone Swoops. Thought he played a pretty good game against Oklahoma last week. A pretty good offensive all-around game. Not sure if we're going to see that game in and game out from him, but at least it was coming off a pretty good performance. So let's go. I'm going to go Texas.
Okay, and for me, Texas is playing some good football, but they're not playing very smart football right now. Okay, and then our last game is number 4, Baylor at West Virginia. And I'm going to take a wild guess that we're all going to pick Baylor, but we got to do scores. So I'll throw out Baylor, 56, West Virginia, 38.
That's going to be an entertaining game.
I think it is.
No, I think it will be too. I think it's going to be, the Vegas spread is 7.5. I think it's going to be around that for most of the game. I'm just going to jump in here, Kevin. I don't know if you want to go first, but I'm going to go ahead and say I have written down 45-30. I said my expectations for the defense were to hold West Virginia to 30 or less, so I'm going to stick with that and have them at 30. I am now comfortable predicting Baylor to make a field goal after last week. So I think Baylor gets 6 touchdowns and a field goal. So I have Baylor 45-30. I think it could be, 45, maybe 27 late. Or, that's kind of how it was with Oklahoma. There's a 45-33 Oklahoma win at West Virginia, but I think it was 45-26, start the fourth quarter. So it was almost over. And I think this game could have a very similar script. Baylor up. Baylor, team's playing close. Baylor pulls ahead in the third quarter, and West Virginia is trying to come back.
The common denominator that West Virginia faced in their games against Alabama and Oklahoma was that they were really, to accelerate your point, Jake, was the fact that they just did not have the depth, the four quarter depth to hang with them.
Yeah.
And that's why they wound up losing those ball games, even though they played really well for a half there. I think they were tied in each of those games. I think that's what we're going to see here. I think we're going to see a really spirited effort by the Mountaineers. They'll make their share of plays. That's just what happens in this type of offense and the climate we're in. Baylor just has so much depth with the wide receiver crews, with their skill positions. I think Petty can have a field day against West Virginia's very up-and-down defense. I'm going to call Baylor 51, West Virginia 34, and I think Baylor will be in pretty – I think Baylor should get control of this thing by the middle of the third quarter.
Yeah, I think that the other thing that you've got is that you've got Petty on one side and you've got Trickett on the other, and Trickett's been better than I expected, but he's not in Petty's league as a quarterback. Okay, so I think that pretty much wraps it up for us, and we will catch you next week on the Sic'em Sportscast.
The Sic'em Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.